Hello and welcome to Talking Aussie Books, a weekly podcast bringing readers and writers of Australian fiction together. I'm Claudine Tennellis. As an avid reader and passionate advocate for Australian fiction, I make it my mission to spotlight local talent. So if you're looking for your next read or simply want to learn more about the Australian literary scene, this podcast is for you. Grab yourself a cuppa, sit back and relax. Listeners, today I get the chance to interview yet another Australian debut novelist. I've honestly lost count of the number of debut authors I've been privileged to chat to over the years, and it never gets old. On the contrary, I continue to gain insight into different pathways to publication and am always inspired by writers who persist in their dreams of finding a home for their work. I mean, who wouldn't be, right? So today's guest author is Philippa Kay, aka Pip, who lives on the central coast of New South Wales. Pip is a mother, educator, and now published novelist. Pip teaches high school English and also lectures at the University of Newcastle. Pip was inspired to write her novel Girl Detectives Just Want to Have Fun during COVID. Set in 1984, it's a pacey mystery novel flavoured with lots of fun 80s nostalgia, big hair, short skirts, and shoulder pads, along with a spicy romance thrown in for some extra fun. A lovely read. And I'm delighted to welcome Philippa to the podcast today to chat about it. Hi, Pip.
Hi, how are you, Claudine?
It's lovely to see you and hear from you. And I wanted to say congratulations on the publication of your first novel.
Well, thank you very much. It's a bit exciting. Thanks. You'll soon, I hope.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind. Pip, it's been out for a few months now. So I wanted to ask you, how would you describe your experience of being a published author? And has it lived up to your pre-publication expectations?
Well, it's hard to have expectations. Of course you do have expectations, and I don't think anything really ever is the same as what you think it's going to be. So it has and hasn't. So it's very exciting and it's wonderful, and I feel very privileged to have a book out there and to actually have put a book out and be a published writer. But I didn't, you know, of course you don't realize that you're watching whether people are buying it, and you've got to go and do talks, and, you know, you've got to talk about yourself all the time, which is interesting. There's nerves, and you just think, you know, you're doing all the writing and the writing's fun, and sort of while you're out there talking about yourself, the writing sort of goes out the window a little bit. So it has been an interesting process that I've thoroughly enjoyed, but has also been very interesting.
So what would you say has been the best thing about having your novel published?
I think you have like a little bit of a sense of, you know, that imposter syndrome that people talk about. You have a teeny weeny sense of, oh, I've done it now. I actually did finish that book, and it is actually a book, and I can hold it in my hands and people are reading it. So there's a little bit of that, I'm not an imposter anymore. But on the flip side, there is also, am I doing it right? Or now I want to write another book, or are people really liking it? Or so there's just having it out there, I think, is the main thing. Like actually having to, you can actually say now, yes, I am an author. I think that's the thing, maybe. Yeah.
I love it. Philippa, was this your first attempt at novel writing?
Oh, no. Well, I've been writing since the kids were little. So I'm, as you said, I'm a teacher and a lecturer. And I actually sort of left that while I had the kids. I had three kids, like boom, boom, boom. And I had been teaching for 10 years. So I was quite well into my career as a teacher. And like teaching's a huge job. And then you go off and you have your babies and you're at home with this little baby who sleeps and drinks and washes and then sleeps some more. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah, this is fun. Okay, what's next sort of thing. I used to tell them stories, you know, lying in bed with them of a nighttime, just telling little stories. So then I started to write them down. I did some crocheting. I did some painting. And then I thought, oh, I'm going to write these stories down. And then as they got older, I made up more stories and wrote those down. And so I sort of started with little children's stories. And my first actual novel that I wrote was a children's book, like a mid-grade novel. And then I actually wrote a YA as they got a little bit older. And then I sort of found a different voice in that adult world. So I think this is like the eighth or something like that. I can't remember. That's quite a number. Yeah, maybe the fifth or sixth. Yeah, I think it's that one. I had pitched another book before this one, a different crime novel that sort of went here and there and people were interested, but not really. And so while you're sort of waiting around for all of that sort of stuff, you keep writing. And so then I wrote Birdie. The one that you're writing is always the one that you love the best. So yeah, it wasn't my first at all. It was well into my writing career.
Did you kind of fall into writing crime, or was it something that you'd always envisaged that you would like to do at some stage while you were writing all these different manuscripts?
No, I think I specifically decided that I would write a crime novel. So that was the one that sort of went out there but didn't really do anything. And then with Birdie, I wanted to write a cozy mystery. And the reason that I wrote the cozy mystery, as you said before, was because of COVID. So we were in lockdown and, you know, the world was on, well, Australia was on fire and, you know, there's social media anxiety and Trump and, you know, all those horrible politicians. And it was just madness at the time, and it was all very glum and angsty, and I was reading crime novels, and I was also reading romance, which was quite lovely because it's so much lighter and, you know, you don't have, there's not a lot of angst. And I just thought I'd mash the two together. And I wanted something light. I couldn't get my hands on something that I wanted to read because everything was a bit angsty. And so I thought, well, you know, that old adage, write what you want to read. So I did. I decided that I'd write what I wanted to read. Yeah.
Fantastic. So Pip, for those who haven't read your book yet, can you tell us more about the story?
Girl Detectives Just Want to Have Fun is a cozy mystery with romance set in the 80s in 1983-84. Our protagonist, Birdie Mealing, is a musician. She's a music teacher and music therapist, and her uncle goes missing. So she decides that she could possibly find him, which the hunky Herb Lawson disagrees with, of course. But she and her friends set out on a course of adventure to find Uncle Larry.
I love the way that you referred to Herb as Hunky Herb, because that is the exact way that I have also referred to him a little bit later in my questions. So Pip, was there a particular event or spark of inspiration that set you down the path of writing Birdie's story?
I think that the 80s setting, well, actually, as I said before, I wanted to write something that was quite light. And I think I thought to myself, well, when was a fun time in my life? When was there no social media? When was there no COVID? When were things a bit simpler? So I decided that the 80s was the time when that was. And in saying that, after I did lots of research and stuff like that, I realized that, you know, there was lots of things going on in the 80s as well that wasn't so fabulous. But in my mind, because I was a teenager and a young adult in the 80s, I thought, well, that was a great time. And that's where I wanted to sort of be and spend some time writing. So that was the inspiration behind Birdie. Yeah. I always like writing strong female characters. So yeah, that's the other inspiration.
Talking about Birdie, I think it's fair to say that she had a life plan. She was all about having fun, enjoying her life, and possibly many romances along the way. Nothing too serious, right? Then comes Hunky Herb, one of the detectives assigned to investigate her Uncle Larry's disappearance. And she's definitely not prepared for him, is she?
No, not in a few ways she's not. She is just having a bit of fun. And even he is a little bit more serious, but I think he sort of was more interested than her. But being the sort of chick that Birdie is, she realizes that she could maybe use her wily ways to take advantage of Herb a little bit. And then ultimately she falls in love with him unexpectedly.
Yeah, I loved the dynamic between the two of them. Throughout the book, in her mind, she was just like, no, 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 I'm going to keep him at arm's length. I'm going to, you know, have my way with him when I feel like it. I'm definitely not going to fall in love with him.
No.
but best laid plans, right?
Yeah, that's right. And she's quite a sweet sort of hearted girl. So she is very interested in people and she's very interested in Herb. And she can see that he's battling with his own identity and some demons. And she can't help herself but inquire about those and see if she can help in any way. In the meantime, she realizes, you know, he's quite beautiful and he's good value to have around. And, you know, they're definitely beginning some sort of friendship. And he's a little bit sexy too.
More than a little bit, I would say. Now, Uncle Larry's disappearance was a very personal matter for Bertie, and she can't leave the police to their investigations without trying to help, which frustrates her no end, doesn't it?
She can't help herself. She wants to find him, and she just can't stop herself from looking. And then she sort of drags Pia and Stu in with her, and Pia's all ready to go. She's like, yeah, let's go. And Stu's a little bit like, oh, I'm not sure this is a good idea, girls. But then he comes on board as well too. So they're just looking this way and looking that way, and they're chatting about it, and they go, well, how about we try this and how about we try that? So, yeah, they're all over the place trying to find out what's going on and trying to avoid her finding out that they're doing all these things. But, yeah, she is compelled to, and I think that, again, that's her personality. She's curious about the world. She's curious about people, and she loves him, and she wants to find out what's going on with him. And she's, you know, frustrated by, she wants it now, a bit like me. I want it now. Let's go. Let's find him. Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. Now, I quite enjoyed Bertie's snappy insight into policing attitudes at the time. Mm. Was this something you were especially keen to highlight?
Especially, not necessarily with police, but just that time. I didn't realize I lived that time, and the sexism towards women, especially misogyny, was just everywhere. But we didn't really, I don't think we really realized when we were young girls that it was so in your face. And that's how guys used to speak to us, and that's how guys used to treat us back then. I do remember feeling a little bit like Constable Celeste, like rolling her eyes as if to say, oh, how rude, yeah, I'll go and get your coffee. I do remember feeling that at the time at that age, but it wasn't, I don't think we really had a name for it or could point it out. And as I said before, we sort of used it to our advantage at times because these men were a bit dumb. And if we, you know, did bat our eyelids and, you know, lean forward a little bit, we'd, you know, get what we wanted at the bar and things like that. So I don't think we really realized what was going on back then. But now that we're a bit more educated and we know that that's probably not a very good way to deal with things, we don't do that sort of thing anymore. And then, you know, people will call people out for being like that, which is a good thing. So I don't know whether I necessarily was having a go at the police. I think I was just trying to reflect the way men spoke to women at the time, especially young women.
Yeah, I absolutely agree that there was that subtle, you know, dig at sexism right throughout the book. But I think for me, it was very vivid in Bertie's interactions with the police at the police station when she was looking for Herb or she was going down to, you know, to make a statement or whatever. You know, it just seemed to me that it was very apparent in the way that they were dealing with her as a young, beautiful woman. And that these days you would absolutely not accept particularly a police officer to speak to you as a member of the public in that fashion.
No. And I think the character of the Sarge, we've all met somebody like that, or probably more than one person like that. And I think it just fell to him to be that character. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. Now, tell me about Herb. And you hinted at it a little bit earlier in something that you said, but he is a man who is conflicted about his identity and whether being a detective in the police force was the best way to use his skills. Was this something you were keen to explore in the novel? And how did you go about trying to bring Herb's experiences to the page?
Well, I grew up in Southwest Sydney, which is very multicultural. And we had lots of different cultures. And we also had kids who were Aboriginal and were probably part of the Stolen Generation, which I didn't realize at the time as a kid. And it always sort of it interested me, that whole thing. Like, where were these kids? Why did I go to school with a child who was Aboriginal in a white family? It always sort of fascinated me as a kid. Again, didn't really think much of it because we were kids. And living on the Central Coast, shout out to the Jarkanjung people of the Central Coast where I work and play, there is a very strong Aboriginal population. So also being a lecturer in inclusion and diversity, I do have lots of characters in my stories who are diverse because I grew up in Southwest Sydney. I live on the Central Coast. I'm a teacher, so I'm surrounded by students and colleagues who come from all different backgrounds. And as I said, the Central Coast is a very strong Aboriginal population. So I was interested in Aboriginal people because I work and play with them. And so I wanted to reflect the sorts of stories that I was hearing from those people of this generation that grew up in a white world and pretending that they were white when really they were Aboriginal. You know, I've heard people say, we were told not to say we were Aboriginal. Our parents told us, don't say it. There are people who still won't say I'm Aboriginal because of that you know, value that they've been brought up with. I read the book Growing Up Aboriginal in Australia, and the same sorts of themes were reflected in that, where people were sort of coming to terms with their Aboriginality after growing up white, technically. And I'm speaking on behalf of a white person. Obviously, I'm not Aboriginal, so I can't truly reflect their experience. But I did speak to Aboriginal elders up here on the coast about growing up white, really you're Aboriginal, and then coming to terms with your Aboriginality. So that's sort of why Herb is that character and why being a policeman especially is problematic. No one knows he's Aboriginal except his boss. He does sort of, again, begin to understand the treatment of Aboriginal people, especially at Redfern, and is battling with being a policeman and then having to sort of stand for policing when it wasn't done very well back then for Aboriginal people. So he is he's very conflicted and an interesting character in that way. Yeah.
It was so interesting to reflect on those issues.
And you have to be careful when you're writing an Aboriginal character. He's not the main character. He's just one of the characters. And you can't, if you're not Aboriginal, you shouldn't really write an Aboriginal character as your main character. I had to get a sensitivity read. I had to liaise with, you know, Darkinjung elders. I had to liaise with Gadigal elders just to make sure that the representation of Gadigal and Aboriginality was correct. So you have to be careful with that. I would say, being a lecturer in inclusion and diversity, I have a little bit more knowledge than the average person, but you still have to be really respectful and do your due diligence of speaking with people who have lived experience and getting a sensitivity read.
Now, Birdie's ignorance about Herb's heritage and the plight of Aboriginal people in general is something that Herb is disturbed by. But I wondered if you thought it was fair of him to judge Birdie in this way, because isn't she a product of her time?
Yeah, that's right. And we are so ignorant to that sort of thing. And I think he is the sort of character who, yeah, he does sort of fly off the handle a little bit. But I think it's because he is also coming to terms with his own Aboriginality. He's frustrated by it as well. And does he really want to accept who he is? And so, you know, that's why I think he bites back at her a few times. Don't try and tell me who I am or what I can and can't do, which we all have that oppositional sort of defiance in us. So that, I think that's why he sort of speaks to her like that. But in saying that, he is also trying to help her understand it and is impressed by her wanting to understand more about it. Yeah.
Yeah, many of the chapters in your book were punctuated by excerpts from 80s publications, mostly Clio magazine.
Yeah.
insights into relationships between men and women at the time, relationships and the differences between how men and women see things, presumably. So I wanted to ask you, why was it important for you to include these pieces in the novel?
As I said before, I grew up in that time, but you have to do research and you have to put yourself in that time. If you're not going to be doing a story about now, you need to find out what it was like then. And you know, my memory is not fabulous. So I tried to sort of immerse myself in the 80s And so one of the ways I did it was what we did as girls was read Dolly magazine and Clio magazine. So I started reading Clio magazine and, oh my God, so funny. Just some of the articles and the value systems and even the politics at the time. Like I was reading, you know, political policies and stuff like that. That was just like, oh my God, like these, is that how we really thought? Is that how we really spoke? Is that what we were aspiring to as chicks, to make sure that we did this and that for our man and not be too intelligent because, you know, we couldn't do that, be more intelligent than the guy. So I just wanted to also immerse the reader in that so that those people who had no experience of the 80s, I mean, lots of people who have read the book just gone, oh my God, I've just transported straight back there. Just absolutely loved that. And so for that generation of people, the book is fabulous. But maybe for a younger generation who are reading it, I wanted them to be aware of the sorts of things that were in those sorts of magazines at the time. Yeah, so that's why I put those in to immerse myself originally, but also immerse the reader in that time.
Yeah, and I think what they did was give a really genuine cultural snapshot of the time.
Yeah. Oh, good.
So, yeah, well done on that.
Thank you.
Friendship is another theme that you explore so well in this book, and Birdie mm-hmm. is supported throughout her escapades by her two dearest friends, Pia and Stu, mm-hmm. who, as you've said, whose upbringings and cultures are clearly so different from Birdie's. And interestingly, I had a best friend in high school called Pia in the 80s. Oh. We are still friends, in fact. But tell me about them and why you wanted to surround Birdie with these lovely characters.
Well, as I said before, I grew up surrounded by these people. And I actually was in kindergarten with a girl called Pia, who was my best friend in kindergarten. And then she left the school. And I sort of missed her, like as a little person. I went to school the next year and there was no Pia. And I sort of missed her a little bit. There's a photo of her in my photo album and another little girl called Jeanette. And I think about them sometimes and just wonder where they are and if they're okay. But I grew up with one of my very good friends is Italian. She's Australian, but her parents were Italian. And the dad used to make wine and the mum used to make sure we had clean hankies and stuff like that. So these people I was surrounded by. And Stu, I don't think I had many friends who were Chinese, but my uncle did a family tree just recently and found out that we descended from a Chinese man who came over to Australia to work on the goldfields. So that really interested me. And I thought, oh, wow, you know, like we're Chinese somewhere back in our ancestry. And actually my cousin, which is very non-PC, but very 80s, his nickname was Changa at school. We had no idea. So we had no idea that we had Chinese heritage. But when I look at photos of my grandpa, my da, I just think, oh my God, of course. Like you can just see it. And so that fascinated me because that was all sort of happening at the same time. So I thought, right, well, I'm going to have a Chinese character because the whole idea of I can't write people with diverse backgrounds because it's not a lived experience, which is totally respectable. I thought, well, possibly I could maybe throw in a Chinese character and find out more about my very distant heritage. So that's where Pia and Stu came from. But, you know, Pia is, yeah, the girls that I went to school with in multicultural Revesby and Bankstown, that's my experience of their mums and that very rich heritage of their cultures.
I love it. So, Pia, I wondered if you could tell me a little bit about your path to publication.
As I said before, I've been writing. I did send off a previous manuscript that went here, there and everywhere. I pitched and I think people spoke about it, but it didn't get published. I think I pitched every agent and every publisher. And as I said, in the meantime, while I was waiting to hear no on all of those, like every other author does, I was writing Birdie. And I think I was just so ready to have something happen. I was so ready to get my book published. And so when I started to send off Birdie, I just went with the first publisher who took interest, and they were a hybrid publisher. So I actually published down a hybrid path, which is not a traditional, technically a traditional path, and not self-publishing. It's sort of an in-between. So I was assisted through the process of publishing by a team of people from Shoreline Agency. So it was an interesting journey and a really, you know, it's an eye-opening sort of process going from a manuscript to a published book. I also did like courses and became a member of all the writing centres, and I did the pitching at ASA, and I went to conferences and things like that. So I think I just immersed myself in the writing world and was sort of ready to go.
So what do you see as having been the biggest challenge along the way?
I don't think you know exactly what you're heading into, and there's no way that anybody can explain that to you. It's the same when you have a baby and people say, oh, you know, here's some advice about this and here's some advice about that. And my advice about having a baby and bringing up a baby is stop listening to people's advice. You don't know until you're doing it. So I think just the whole process is a challenge because you don't know what you're doing. And even people who are publishing their second book are still going, well, I didn't realize this would be like this either, that the whole second novel. So I think that's the biggest challenge, is not really knowing what you're doing, as with a baby, and just sort of jumping in with your two feet and going, all right, well, let's just do this. But I'm that type of chick anyway. I'm just going to get in there and do it. I think you learn best by doing. I do lots of research, and I do look into this, into everything, and I do try and get me a bit crazy with needing to know everything about everything. But in the end, you've got to just jump in, which is what I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. I love it. Pip, if there was one thing you would like readers to take away from this novel, what would it be?
Have fun. I think I purposely called it Girl Detectives Just Want to Have Fun, because I didn't want it to be terribly serious, even though, as you said, there's some very deep themes in there. I just want people to have fun with it. I want them to read it. I want them to love it, and I want them to just have fun.
Now, I always love asking debut novelists for tips about writing and or publication, and knowing what you know now and the experiences that you've had already, what would be your top three tips?
The first one would be immerse yourself. So become a member of lots of different places. So I think I'm a member of the RWA, Writing New South Wales, ASA, Crime Writers Association, all of those sorts of things, Sisters in Crime. So my first tip would be get amongst it, get in it, and ask lots of questions, go to lots of courses, speak to other authors. So just immerse yourself in that. And then, as we said before, my second tip would probably be maybe don't jump in. Maybe don't jump in as quickly maybe as I did. I don't know. So maybe my second tip would be you don't have to rush. I felt like I did rush a little bit. And now that I'm in it, I realize that you probably don't have to rush and that there's so much time. I mean, I'm in my 50s and sometimes I think, oh God, why didn't I do this earlier? But I'm not going to stop doing it. So just, you know, take your time, love it, and make sure you're ready before you jump in, maybe as ready as you can be. Just take your time. My third tip would be, don't know.
Two tips is fine.
Two tips. Okay, great. Two tips is good. Okay.
I love it. Thank you so much for sharing that, Pip. That was great.
Thanks.
So I'm guessing this isn't the last time we'll meet, Birdie. So I was wondering if you could tell us any more about your next novel.
Well, as I said before, you're always writing. So I actually have the second Birdie written. It's already written, and it's with an editor at the moment. And I've also written, you know, another whole manuscript, which I'll be pitching at the RWA coming up. I hope it's not the last time we meet, Birdie. And like, I've also already got the third sort of Birdie story in my head too. So I don't know, hopefully I'll be able to write and write and write, Birdie. I'm not sure that a character in the 80s will get old. I don't know, like whether people are going to go, oh, that's too much of that. And you know, I might too. But yeah, it's definitely written and is being edited at the moment.
Oh, well, that is very good news indeed.
Oh, good.
We see more of Hunky Herb as well.
Oh, Hunky Herb is definitely in there. There's a little bit more about Herb, actually. We delve a little bit even deeper into Herb and his background in this one. So, yeah, it'll be good.
My eyebrows are waggling. Yes, absolutely. Oh, Pip, that's wonderful. If listeners wanted to learn more about you and your book or books, as the case may be, where can they find you?
I'm probably most active on Instagram. My husband is he loves like technology. He's very good at technology. He just comes up with all these crazy ideas. So we've done some crazy things on Instagram. I don't know whether you've seen them, Claudine, but some crazy 80s things we did. So I'm mostly active on Instagram. I quite like Instagram as opposed to, I am on Facebook and I have a website and they're all just simple Philippa K. Ryder. But yeah, I think I'm probably most active on Instagram. I know my friends are there. All the girls are there. So that's where we have our most fun.
Pip, I really enjoyed reading Girl Detectives Just Want to Have Fun. And I've loved our chat today. Aww. I wanted to thank you so very much for joining me on Talking Aussie Books.
Oh, thank you for having me, Claudine. It was so much fun. It was lovely to speak to you.
That's a wrap, folks. If you enjoyed this podcast episode, please drop me a line via my webpage at claudinetonellis.com, via Instagram, Facebook or Twitter. Alternatively, consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts. Until next time, happy reading!